You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
We love to overreact, and of course, we're probably overreacting, but we shouldn't be. It's a game in January. Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer. If you didn't see the game last night, Chris, how would you describe it and the importance of it?
I would describe it as revealing, at least in terms of what the Nets need to work on moving forward. I'm not at all concerned about the ability of, you know, Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant to put up points. I mean, they scored 96 in that game. I think they scored like 42 of the last 57 points for Brooklyn in that game. They'll find a way to make it work offensively. But there were a couple of things that really stood out. One, the Nets don't defend anybody. And this has been, you know, going on for most of the season. Cleveland came into that game with the 30th ranked offense. Like, they stunk. And they were without Darius Garland. They were without Kevin Love. And they still put 147 on Brooklyn in double overtime. That needs to be addressed. They don't have a defensive stopper on the perimeter. DeAndre Jordan's best years as a rim protector are probably behind him. They don't have anybody off the bench that provides that type of presence. And they don't really trust anybody on that bench. I mean, Steve Nash, I guess, nominally played a 9-man rotation, but, you know, Joe Harris played 42 minutes off the bench. Nobody else played more than 12. Meanwhile, Kevin Durant, who is not that far removed from an Achilles tear, played 50 minutes. You know, James Harden, in his third game with the Nets, played 50, his third straight with 40-plus. Kyrie Irving, off for 2 weeks, goes for 45. You know, Steve Nash either needs to start trusting the guys on his bench, or Sean Marks has to go out there and find a way to get him guys if he does.
Yeah, I think you're going to have scoring, and then defense is going to be optional. And I think you have to have a concept for defense, and then you have to have a willingness to want to play defense as well. It feels like Kevin Durant is the one guy who can play defense or will play defense, but trying to add to your roster at this point in the season or later in the season, what's the feasibility of that, Chris?
Not much at this point during the season. I mean, you can scour the G League when they get started in early February to see if anybody kind of fits that mold. Their trade options are extremely limited because of what they gave up in the James Harden deal. What they have to be hoping for is that the buyout market yields a player that fits what they're looking for. I mean, every year there seems to be two or three guys that hit that market that can make an impact on a contending team. The difference this year, though, Dan, is that the expansion of the play-in tournament is going to make a lot more teams feel like they're in contention. So if you're a team that's sitting there at 11th or 12th, but you're only a couple of games back from 9th or 10th, you're going to think, all right, maybe I won't buy this guy out because we have a chance to get into the postseason. That could depress the buyout market, and if that happens, that's not good news for the Nets.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. I hadn't thought of that. But if I'm the Lakers, if I'm the Sixers, if I'm the Bucks or the Heat, like how concerned do you think these teams should be and are with what's going on in Brooklyn?
You know, concerned might be too strong a word. You're certainly watching every game they play to see if their defense becomes, you know, passable enough to catch up with their offense. And they don't have to be a top 10 defensive team. They just need to be probably top 15, top half of the NBA to be a championship contender. So I'd be watching them because, you know, look, the playoffs comes down to guys that can get you buckets. And the Nets now have three guys that individually can get you buckets. And that's an incredibly valuable part of this. But, you know, another side light here, Dan, is to make big threes work, you've got to have sacrifice. Kyrie even alluded to this, you know, last night in his media interview after the game. You've got to have guys willing to sacrifice. And somebody in that group is going to have to really sacrifice in the way that Chris Bosh did and Kevin Love did in their time as members of Big Three. Kyrie would seem to be the guy that would need to do that. But I'm struck by this about Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie, you know, he's a quirky guy. Like, you should, if you're Kyrie Irving, you should be excited about the possibility of playing with James Harden and Kevin Durant. And maybe he is. He's saying all the right things right now. But you have to remember, Kyrie was part of a championship team in Cleveland, and he forced his way out with 2 years left in his contract. Yeah. He was part of a really good team in Boston. He said he was going to come back, and then he said, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. He wanted to control his own destiny badly in the summer of 2019, and he did that. He signed with Brooklyn, his hometown team, in a way. He signed to play with Kevin Durant, his best friend in the league. He picked his situation for the first time in his career, and now he's back in a similar place where he's having kind of his career dictated to him by the addition of James Harden. That to me bears watching, Dan, how Kyrie reacts to once again being in a situation that was not of his choosing.
Did we learn anything from his press conference?
Just that whatever is going on in his life is still wearing on him. I mean, I'm not, I don't like to wade too deep into the psyche of Kyrie Irving and what, you know, what really impacts him and what doesn't, but you can't watch that press conference and think that everything in Kyrie's world is okay. I mean, he was asked if he was okay. He just basically nodded in the affirmative. I don't know how it manifests itself. If he's able to push past it to play basketball at a high level, but it's pretty clear that what pushed Kyrie away from the game in early January is still lingering with him now.
What do you think of the Lakers so far?
You're almost waiting for any kind of bump along the way. I mean, maybe they get it on this road trip. They start a 7-game road trip tonight against Milwaukee. That'll be a fun matchup. I kind of think in this game, Dan, LeBron and Anthony Davis go right at Giannis. I mean, LeBron, as you know, like still, you know, remembers every slight against him and is still, I think, bristling a little bit from not getting as many MVP votes as he should have had. And Anthony Davis thought he was Defensive Player of the Year last year and not Giannis. So I think they're going to go at Giannis pretty good in this game tonight. But the Lakers just is, look, they haven't been had their season interrupted by COVID. The guys they brought in have pretty much worked from Dennis Schroeder on down. And LeBron is playing at an MVP level while I think playing the fewest minutes per game in his career. So it's just they're not really a story because nothing has slowed their ascent. They're picking up exactly where they left off last season.
Quiet is good in Lakerland. Yeah. As we found out with Frank Vogel, quiet is good. It leads to championships. Chris, thanks as always for joining us. We appreciate your time, bud.
You got it.
That's Chris Mannix. He covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated, senior writer. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. We make way for Andrew Brandt, the MMQB columnist, former Packers executive. All right, let's go one by one here, Andrew. Let's start with Deshaun Watson. How tradable is he?
Hey, Dan, I'm not your clickbait guy. Everybody's rushing to the fantasy football trades and it's going to be really hard. He signed a new contract, as everyone knows, four short months ago. He committed to the Texans 4 years. And when you do these big contracts, we'll talk about Carson Wentz too, there's consequences. And consequences if somehow you move on, somehow you separate early in the contract, which of course would be, you know, incredibly early in the contract. Best case for the Texans would be leaving behind $27 million of dead money. For people that don't understand, dead money's not cash. The cash has been paid. Dead money is cap accounting that stays on your cap even after the player leaves. $27 million for a player that won't be there. Now, of course, you know, you're getting rid of your franchise player, your best player. You've got to add quarterbacks in place of him. So it's going to be a lot more than $27 million allocated to quarterback.
But how long does the $27 million stay?
That would stay this year.
Okay, that's
that
it.
That would stay this year.
So,
and then next year, you know, it would be off the books. But again, what is value for Deshaun Watson? I've said from the beginning, Dan, they got a new general manager. If he trades Deshaun Watson, he's going to be an old general manager pretty quick.
But if I was the owner and you were my GM and I ordered you to trade Deshaun Watson, what would you ask for?
Well, I think you're talking about a young player at the top of his game that's only going to get better. I don't even know what to ask for. I mean, this is kind of the James Harden kind of trade where you have multiple number one picks. You need players back. You need to replace the position. I don't know if there's ever been a trade like this. You know, when we talk, quarterbacks don't make it to this kind of market.
Well, we normally trade up to get a pick in a draft, and we're giving draft capital there. This is an established franchise, legitimate top 7, 6, 5 quarterback probably in the NFL right now playing on a bad team.
Is he Carson Wentz, we're going to talk about him, but to get him, just give you an idea, they traded a first and a fourth for that year, a first and a second for the upcoming year. Okay, and that's a player who had never played and who was coming in on a rookie contract, which is cheap, relatively. So just think about those kind of things. I mean, Deshaun Watson would be multiple times that. And again, I do not think it's going to happen.
Carson Wentz, what's the likelihood he gets traded, and what would you be asking for in return?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get traded again because now we're talking about, here's that dead money number again, Dan. It's $34 million, best case. Now, if they pay him the $10 million roster bonus before they trade him or June 1 kind of thing, then it's $44 million, not $34 million of dead money. So I don't think it's going to happen. We've seen the change with Peterson. You know, basically they chose Wentz over Peterson. You know, they chose the guy they want to fix. And the reason they want to fix him is because it's such a massive investment, they're not going to move on from that. You know, and again, people say his talents regressed. Well, we know he's done it, right? 2 years ago, he played MVP quality football. So someone's going to fix him. It's not going to be Doug Peterson. I think he stays.
Well, you are a buzzkill. You're not clickbait. You don't think...
And you know, this is not the NBA. You know, you trade James Harden and you get picks and players and all that, but there's no long tail of economics. That's what people need to understand. I managed a cap for 10 years. NFL economics is so different.
But if you're Deshaun Watson's agent, you know the math here. Like how do you get your client out of Houston?
You know, if you really want to get him out, you pay back a lot of millions of dollars. You know, I mean, people have suggested that, which I think I don't, if I'm an agent, I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah.
You know, this guy signed 4 months ago. I don't know what changed. People say, well, he had to take it because the money was so big. Well, you know, Dak Prescott, that market's not going to go down. I don't think Deshaun Watson had any downside to waiting to do a contract, even if injured, his market was going up.
But, you know, I look at this with Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
If you're the team, like, does it make sense for Cleveland to sign Baker Mayfield now? And the same with the Ravens with Lamar Jackson.
You know, I think that we're back to Wentz here. I think the Wentz and maybe Jared Goff are going to give teams a little pause there. You know, those teams jumped in after year three, gave the massive extension. And you hear Sean McVay talk about Jared Goff, and we know what's going on with Wentz. You know, you get the feeling that they should have waited.
Yeah.
And maybe Mayfield and Jackson, maybe they do wait. You know, Andrew Luck, they waited till the fifth year. Trubisky, of course, never done a deal after his rookie, but that's different, I know. Mahomes, they rushed in after 3 years. But there may be pause with those quarterbacks you mentioned to not do a deal right away after the 3-year minimum allotment, where you can renegotiate.
Any chance Andrew Luck comes out of retirement for the Colts?
No, I don't think so, Dan.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I think he's a different cat, you know, and I think he's into a lot of different things besides football. That guy's not coming back.
Okay, can you guarantee that Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson will not be traded? You got to put something up here, Andrew.
Yeah.
You guarantee something?
Yeah, I'm going to guarantee it.
Okay, what are you willing to put up?
Say again?
What are you willing to put up?
I'll come back on your program and gain the wrath of all the haters saying, Brandt, you were wrong. I mean, I don't...
How about a liquid cheese bath? Because you used to be with the Packers. Would you do a liquid, a shower of cheese on the show? Wisconsin cheese.
Yeah.
You'll do it?
I wear that helmet behind me.
You can wear the helmet, but you would do a shower of cheese. Would you do that?
I will. If they're not on their teams, I will do that. I will do that, Dan.
Okay. Fair enough. And I would like to offer up McLovin. If they do decide to trade one of those two, McLovin would then do a shower of cheese.
So what? That's my gift?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
We're right. Both Philly guys. He doesn't want to see...
We could do Philly cheese. We could do Philly cheese. Somebody has to have cheese poured on him in here. I mean, this is, you know, this is quid pro quo here with Andrew. Who is... You know what? I'll do the cheese.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'll do the cheese if either one of these guys is not traded.
Okay, if one of them's traded,
then you're going to be a true cheesehead.
and you are as well.
Yes, I will. I know you're working with Sports Illustrated. You got a podcast, newsletter. What are you working on? What are you covering?
Newsletter, you can sign up. Go to andrew-brandt.com. I'm doing that newsletter. Talking a lot about memories this week. You see the helmet. We just talked about it. I was there. My last game, Brett Favre's last game. Aaron's last game as a backup when we hosted the NFC Championship before. That was the coldest game ever. Of course, Tom Coughlin's face was fuchsia, as you remember. And unfortunately, we lost in the overtime to the Giants, who went on to beat the Patriots, who were undefeated. So it was quite a memory, you know. And now they're back there. Obviously, I like their chances. I'm biased. But it's great to see them back there with hosting a championship game once again.
What are the odds Aaron Rodgers ends his career as a Packer?
I think, when they drafted Jordan Love, it just seemed like now we have a separation date, which is sad. But it's not going to be anytime soon, Dan. As we know, he's MVP, and he's going to play next year. But maybe, just like him, maybe 3 years, just like him with Brett. You know, it's a three-year window where they develop Love and see what happens. But he has played lights out. He's at the top of his game, as you know.
Always great to talk to you. And I've never looked forward to a trade as much as I've looked forward to maybe one of these trades with Deshaun Watson and or Carson Wentz.
There will be cheese. For one of us,
there will be blood. There will be cheese. Thank you, Andrew. Great to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure, Dan.
That's Andrew Brandt, MMQB columnist and the Business of Sports podcast. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Chris Berman, ESPN NFL primetime co-host and 2010 Pete Rozelle Radio TV Award from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Championship Sunday coming up this weekend. Chris and Keyshawn Johnson will air on ESPN at 10 Eastern. That'll be following the Bills and Chiefs. Also, NFL primetime divisional playoff shows available now through Saturday night on ESPN. ESPN Plus, as we welcome in the Hall of Famer, Chris Berman. Chris, how are you, buddy?
Dan, good to be with you, man. You're still somebody. I was somebody. It's a pleasure to break some bread with you on championship week.
What's the oddest place you've been recognized because of your voice?
Oh, because of voice only. Well, I mean, I go to a lot this year, right, when you have masks on, right, and you're in the supermarket, let's say. That's not the oddest, but this is the most recent of all the time. And, you're alone. You're not saying anything. But then when you speak up, like two people in line at the checkout go, wait a minute, is that you? I said, geez, I had a mask on. Like, that didn't, not that I'm running away from anything. Voice, this is going way back now because it's kind of the answer you want. If I forgot in all the years you and I, we were traveling and flying and going through airports and connecting, blah, blah, blah. If I forgot if it was summer or fall, if I'd go to, let's say, O'Hare, right? Yeah. And I'd hear in July, kind of under everyone's breath, back, and I look around and I didn't see anybody. Oh, it must be summer, baseball. And then, in the fall, you'd hear anything from Rumble or the Raiders, or you could go up. And then I look around and where are they? Nobody's looking at me. Oh, yes, that's right. It's football season, so.
They just yell it out. They see you walking and
Yeah.
No need to bother you. They acknowledge you by just throwing out something.
I smile. Why not? My goodness, if we're on, like you and I, as long as we've been on and no one knows what we've done or what we do, then we've kind of failed, right? I guess.
How did you become a Bills fan?
I'll try not to make this too long. The first part of the equation is the AFL. Okay, Dan, so I grew up at Shea Stadium with the Jets. Dad, season tickets, two young boys, 9 and 7, 64. They moved to Shea Stadium, the World's Fair. We got tickets, name it, 65, et cetera. The Bills, as a 9 and 10-year-old, were the first champ of my league. So, you know, as you're a young kid, you know who's, like, good and who's not, right? So there was a soft spot from then. They were the first champs that I remember. And oddly enough, they could have played in the first Super Bowl if they had won 3 in a row, but the Chiefs beat them. I mean, it's just a little, I mean, it's nothing to do with Sunday, but it's a little footnote. And then fast forward, which you and I probably talked about in the days, and I used to go to a lot of training camps, 10, 12 of them, you know, one day here, one day there. It's not like baseball. I mean, you're traveling, blah, blah. It was the last of 12 teams that I saw at 88, and I'm not Bill Polian, and I'm not anyone. I can't stand on the sideline and tell you in a day what you have. But this team looked like the best that I saw, and they were 7 and 8 the year before. And here's Jim Kelly throwing, and rookie Thurman Thomas, and Bruce Smith was the number one pick, and Cornelius Bennett they traded for, and Andre Reed, et cetera, et cetera. I picked him for the Super Bowl, Dan. I just, you know, I am the Swami. I throw things. I throw things out there. Some of them stick, right? And now they did get to the championship game. Off of 7. Everyone said, "What are you nuts?" And they started 4-0, et cetera. Well, I went up to cover them. And I know this is an answer longer than you want, but I went up to cover them before their first playoff game, which was against Houston in Glanville, not the Frank Reich game, but another one. And Glanville wasn't coaching them in that game, but. I get ready to leave to go back to the airport, and I get to the airport at whatever 7:30 for the flight to Hartford. And there's a couple TV cameras. There's Bill Polian. There's the mayor or the first city councilman. I forget exactly. And they hastily like stop me and present me the key to the city. Now all I did was predict their football team.
Yeah.
But the folks in Buffalo, as you know. You know, they're national punchline. Oh, is it snowing? You know, and the fact that I just supported their football team, they wanted me to know that I was one of them. And so you can't turn down that kind of love. And my 41 years at ESPN, I mean, that's as far as, you know, a fan base from afar. I mean, that's something. It's rewarded me to this day.
But
of course, with that team, I mean, I keep in touch with all of them.
But did you catch any grief from management at ESPN that you were, I guess, openly rooting for a team? I mean, you had fun with it, but you were – nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. You also, you know, love the Niners as well. I didn't know if management said, let's try to be unbiased here.
Well, I don't think I was biased. I'm allowed to pick whoever I want, right? Like, and then if I start to be 2-20, you better analyze it. Well, I'm going with the Bills. Well, they lost by 30 again, you idiot, you know. So, no, because I didn't feel I was walking a line, Dan. First of all, in those years, all of us had teams. As long as it, and I rarely got accused. And I think this is true. I know it's true. Of if it as long as it doesn't shade what you see or what you say, they play the game. Whoa, they were the refs. They screwed. Now stop. And I don't think it ever did. I tried very hard to make sure that it never did. To this day, and it also was helpful. San Francisco was kind of a non-thought. The Niners. Until they won with Montana. They were not a national team at all. As it turns out, you know, I wasn't piling on the Dallas Cowboys or the Pittsburgh Steelers or the New York teams. the teams I kind of adopted, as it turned out, were kind of the corners of the country where they didn't have national voices. Like Buffalo, I know it's not the corner, but just bear with me. Early on, Dan, Tampa, you remember, right? Certainly San Diego and Seattle. Well, those weren't – so these were teams that there wasn't an abundance of national, quote, voices for them. But as long as it doesn't affect your ability to be honest, I don't think anybody who's a sports fan can hold against you like some teams more than others. That nothing's changed in all my years there.
What would your approach be if you were just starting out now with ESPN as opposed to when you were there in the embryonic stages?
Good question. Well, I would hope I had the hair that I had then. I think I saved some in a pillow somewhere, but I can't put my hand on it right at the moment, Dan. But not unbelievably different, because I think deep down our job is to get it right, to convey the information. I think that, well, my excitement is real. I mean, you know me personally, I'm kind of the same way. That doesn't mean that I shout down every aisle of the supermarket. But I think enthusiasm, when it's genuine, is appreciated whatever job you do, whether it's digging ditches or whether we're on TV doing sports, which is a little easier to be enthusiastic about. And I think as long as you are yourself, I think those three things, I mean, I would tell any young sportscaster, radio, TV, or hopeful, to do those things. Don't be enthusiastic if you're more of a Bob Lee type. It's not to say that Bob didn't enjoy it, but he's different than me or you. And I have the utmost respect for Bob, obviously, to this day. So I don't think in that at the very base of starting out, Dan, that there would be that much difference. Those catchphrase, you know, the things that are nicknames, etc. I never did those to be, hey, I can be famous, because that doesn't work in the long run. So those three things, I still would be the same in that way. Now, obviously, medium and everything has changed some, but we would adapt to whatever technologies are now versus then, or et cetera. I think you probably, if someone asked you that, you'd be pretty similar answer. I would think so.
Well, they didn't want us to be ourselves, and you probably ran into this as well, that certain management members didn't want you to do those nicknames or be yourself. Keith and I faced that same kind of barrier there. There was a glass ceiling that we didn't realize, and then when we did, it was probably too late. Nowadays, you know, they're begging for talent to be, hey, go in there and have fun, be big, be, you know, don't be afraid. Whereas we tiptoed late at night, and I'm sure you probably had your moments where you had somebody who said, hey, can you cut out the nicknames here?
Well, I did, and we don't need to go into that story. They did at the end of a baseball season in 85, and they were back in 86, and he was gone. So they fought the law, and the law won. But that's, I think we, but I don't want, there's no, I mean, that's a long, long.
Nah, we're good with that. We've moved on from that.
And, but
I still tell people about the Charlotte Observer. When I first got there, and I was, for some reason, I had to observe the making of SportsCenter for, I think, at least 2 months. And you just saw me come in. I'd sit down. I wouldn't say anything. I would just watch you guys write SportsCenter. And then every day I walked in and you went, hey, the Charlotte Observer. And I just said, my wife would say, how does it go? And I said, oh, Chris Berman calls me the Charlotte Observer. I said, I don't know if he likes me or not, but he calls me the Charlotte Observer. And she goes, okay. And then I explained it to her. But yeah, and then my first show was when Chris stayed after doing the 11 o'clock, and he stayed for my first one. So forever indebted as he went on and helped the Charlotte Observer.
So I'm to blame, huh?
Yes.
With all this.
Whatever happened. Yeah, you helped me.
Hey, listen, but just quickly to get a chuckle out of you, you know, the beauty was my style was, not to mean that anybody at any moment couldn't say, you know, cut it, you know, pipe it down or cut it out or tone it or change it. The beauty of figuring this out in the 80s is we, I don't know who was watching in the very early stages. Now, I was a little, not wilder. We didn't crack eggs on our heads. We were all into sports, but 4 years, Dan, I did the 230. Now, that's 11:30 on that west and, you know, earlier in Hawaii, but I tape was expensive. Maybe the bosses will never see it. You know? So a lot of how I was established was a decade ahead of you, at least at our place. I mean, you were at CNN, et cetera. But it's not to say, well, he's already this. We can't change his batting style, you know, the way he throws the ball. Sure you can, because if we can't improve, we're going backwards. But I... You know, some people were using us as a nightlight early on, and that's when I kind of established on the air, kind of lurching forward and backwards, who I would eventually become. I had that advantage. There was nobody observing us.
All right. In 60 seconds, which is impossible for you.
Yeah, correct.
Tell me what's going to happen in both title games this weekend.
Well, we'll start with the Chiefs because as we speak, we don't know if Mahomes is playing. And for us to guess, I mean, I think he would, but that's not the Chiefs hiding information, right?
Yeah.
I think if he plays and he, you know, is pretty, I think we have, you know, we didn't get the games last weekend we thought we would as far as, you know, points, et cetera. I think that's a 28-24 somebody fun. And the other one, wow, can you pick against Tom? But he and Gronk have played in the cold, but I don't know about a lot of others. Aaron Rodgers is on such a level that Tom will have to be his very best, which he's certainly capable of doing. To be, that's another 28-24-ish. Notice I'm hedging here.
You are.
Well, which is unSwami-like. I would lean to the Packers, and on the first one, I'm so close with both teams, you know, Andy Reid and me.
Yeah.
A big part of me would like the Bills to get to the Super Bowl, and then, my God, are they going to be staring at Tom Brady 20 years like, oh no, not him. Or will the Chiefs have that rare opportunity, Dan, to be a repeat champ? And that doesn't come around a lot. And they're at home. I'd give the edge to the two home teams as we speak at this moment.
It's great to talk to you, as always. Hope you're doing well and having fun.
I am. It's prime time on Real TV, ESPN, the original, you know, before they changed the cans. And good to talk to you, pal.
Thank you, bud.
Best home, okay?
Thank you, Chris. That's Chris Berman, the ESPN NFL primetime co-host and member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Ian Eagan will be on the call. He's got the AFC title game. Westwood won. Busy guy. He was the Nets play-by-play voice last night, of course, all season long, as he got a chance to see the Nets and the Cavs. I guess the Nets fully assembled with Kyrie back. You want to start with football? Or you want to start with the game last night, Ian?
Hey, Dan, before we start, could I just tell you how I became a New York Arrows fan?
Yes.
Soccer league.
Yeah.
Became such a huge part of my life. Steve Jungle was an icon.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get enough of it. I consumed it every day, 24/7. And it lives with me today.
That's all I wanted to know, Ian. I wish
great chatting
well.
With you.
Yeah, I wish you well.
All the best. This was like a quasi-human moment that we just had. Thank you.
Are you preparing for both quarterbacks? You know, so as a play-by-play guy, you know, we hear defense has got to prepare for both quarterbacks. Are you prepared for Chad Henne and Patrick Mahomes this weekend?
Dan, this is why you're the best interviewer in the business. Nobody has ever asked me, are you prepared for Chad Henne? Do you have your call straight? Anything can happen. Let's go. Get the ad-libs moving. I'm ready either way. I feel very comfortable that I can handle it. If it is Henny, I'll make the adjustment, Dan.
You're a pro. You're a pro's pro. You're a pro's pro. But when you prepare for these games, how important is it that you get the access to these players or these coaches? And you know, by doing this remotely, trying to get access, how difficult is that?
That's probably been the strangest part of the season, the lack of interaction, not just with players and coaches that we're accustomed to doing the network games, but each other. We did not have one production meeting in person. Everything was done virtually. And you make the most of that when you can, and you do have people's attention. You also see people in some rather strange setups, I must admit, that throws you a bit when you get a little deeper inside, like me for right now. I'm not where you think I am. You know, I have to do what I have to do. I get a rental in Wyoming, and this is what we're doing for the season.
And don't have pants on.
I don't. But no, you nailed it. The access or lack thereof. Yes, there's definitely a part of the broadcast that suffered because of it, but you find other ways, and even on these Zoom calls, you figure out a way to connect with a player and find something that's a little different that might create a unique answer that you can use on the air. But we did not go to one facility the entire season, and our schedule was very strict. Get to the city, test, wait for your test result in your room until you get it. And then, even then, very limited access to other people.
What's on the bookshelf back there?
This is my wife's office. I have no idea.
Well, you got bobbleheads there. You got a basketball.
Yes. Hold on. I have a dress designer. Dave, what do we got going here? Dan wants to know. I'll figure it out later.
Okay. I'm just curious. You don't even know what's behind you.
I don't.
No. Sad. He's Ian Eagle, or Ian Eagle, the Yes Network play-by-play voice for the you've been called that, haven't you, before?
Oh, very much. I've been called Ian Eagle. I've been called Ian Iagle. I've been called Iron Eagle. I've been called Jan Eagle. I've been called many things that I can't even say on your family-friendly show.
At what point last night did you realize that the Nets might be in trouble against the pesky Cavaliers?
When Colin Sexton had a out-of-body experience.
Well, didn't you say Colin Sexton is not human?
Yes, and I want to make sure everybody understands.
That's technically incorrect.
That is not a criticism. That is applauded. I'm saying that he's gone beyond what we thought was humanly capable. So I hope he takes that as a positive. That's what it was meant as. Yeah, they ran out of gas, clearly. Obviously, Sexton hits a three at the end of regulation. The Nets can't convert. There's a foul call that gets overturned, but a jump ball knocked to the backcourt. They go to overtime. Sexton starts to heat up. And then, as we saw, he took over in the second OT. It's one game. We all want instant gratification, as we know, in life. People love instant coffee and instant dating. This is going to take a little bit of time for things to gel and mesh. But, boy, is it going to be entertaining and fun along the way.
Do you have answers? Do you care about answers from Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, I think the concern for me would be if he's garnering joy from this, that to me is the real question. He didn't show a whole lot of emotion in the game. And look, I'm not going to play psychiatrist. I can only see what I see. I'm not even at the game. You know, let's face facts. I'm watching it from a screen at Barclays Center when the game is in Cleveland. So you want to talk about lacking nuance. You're getting no nuance. You can only see what they show you. But what I could gather was the first time he really emoted was when that offensive foul was called on him. And then you saw some of the facial expressions. He's definitely going through some stuff right now. And the biggest key is that he gets through that. And from a team standpoint, they need someone that is fully committed and all in. And if there's some things happening in his private life that are affecting that, then he's going to have to take care of that before the team can really turn the page and focus on winning a championship.
When you do play-by-play, how much of it is focused on the monitor as opposed to watching the game itself?
Yeah, NFL, I've probably leaned more towards the monitor over the last couple of years than I had in previous years, trying to make sure that I'm talking to pictures. So I would say it's in that 50-50 range for NFL. For NBA, I was normally, under normal circumstances, I was 70-30 live action, 30 off the monitor. And right now we're 100%, basically. Even the home games, because you're high up, I find myself cheating towards the monitor more than I ever did when I was courtside, just to make sure that my eyes are matching what I think I'm seeing on the court. It's definitely been an adjustment. Look, nobody at home probably cares, and nor should they. It's the play-by-play person's challenge, and you've got to figure it out in your own way.
Have you ever stopped talking while just watching a play? Like, you almost forget that you're supposed to be calling the play that you're watching.
Yeah, I would say now more than ever, that part actually creeps into your head because you're not there. There's the moment of detachment that you feel that, man, I'm just watching this like everybody else, but you have to call it. I've been pretty fortunate that I've maintained the running commentary, but there have been a few moments where my normal muscle memory is not kicked in of what I'm seeing, synthesizing the information and spitting it out. I would say this year, Dan, in even a truncated season, I probably made two or three mistakes on identification. And I went through maybe a 10-year stretch where I made zero mistakes on identification, just based on your brain taking in the information, processing it, thinking you saw something, and then questioning for a moment if you did.
How much do you follow social media after a game you've done?
I do have a burner account. I'll be the first to admit that. It's Todd Fritz 11, if you want to follow me on Twitter. I follow a little bit. I definitely have people that send me things, so I know what's happening. I'm aware of what's being talked about.
Well, last time you got roughed up.
Oh, man. NFL games, I would say I take a day off after the game. I just learned probably 2 years ago that would maintain my sanity. I must say I don't get it as bad as others, so I'm certainly not in a position to complain. I try to bring across a affable quality, Dan. And
yeah, of
I
course.
Hope that resonates.
It's evident. It is evident right now. Oh,
I'm saying, please don't. Twitter world, don't. Don't kill me.
Who's the play-by-play voice that you want to fight?
Right now?
Yeah.
If I had to take on one play-by-play voice right now?
Yeah.
Woo! Oh, that's a great one.
Could you take Joe Buck?
You know, Joe's obviously bigger than me. I think I could surprise Joe in the lower extremity areas that he may not be anticipating that I would attack.
Eagle wants a piece of Joe Buck. Yes. Below the waist.
Below the waist. All below the waist.
Yes. Yeah.
Lay off the moneymaker, Joe. Stay away from the face.
What advice did you give your son when he did the NFL game on Nickelodeon?
I did not want to inundate him, so I just gave him three pieces of advice that I thought could help him in the broadcast. One, I said, you have to have command. When this game goes on the air, people have to realize that this is unique, this is different, and it's going to start with you. It's going to emanate from you. If you set the tone early, then people will get it. Two, you have to be a really good point guard, a traffic cop, get everybody involved. If you sense that somebody isn't getting a touch, get them a touch. And then three, you must have fun. The whole point of the broadcast is to have fun. And if that's not coming across on the air, if you guys aren't laughing, if you're not enjoying each other's company, then this thing is not going to work. And he checked every box. I was really, really impressed with how he handled himself.
He did a great job. And, you know, I thought that Nate Burleson did a wonderful job as well.
He's a star.
Yeah.
He is a true television superstar.
Yeah. Well, it's great to talk to you. And
you too.
Good luck. Now, do you get to go to Kansas City or are you staying at home for the game?
No, Kansas City, I do travel.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So I will be in Kansas City. And I should mention in the NFL, I did travel the entire season. And that was odd. Like, airports are empty for the most part. TSA, you're getting through, for me, sometimes 45 seconds. And people have been very respectful of other people's space. Normally, it was the herd mentality when they did the boarding process. Now, people lay back and wait. So it's been nice. It's been a nice change.
Yeah, I wasn't going to listen to the game or watch the game, but now that I've spoken to you, I'm going to listen yes. I'm going to stay in my car and yes. listen to Westwood One, and I'm not going to watch it.
This is why we do the interviews.
I want you to create promotion. I want you to paint the picture for me.
I am. I am going to paint the word picture, and the whole time I'm going to be thinking about fighting Joe Buck
and his lower extremities. Are you doing the Super Bowl? Because if you're not doing the Super Bowl, then I'm not going to be watching.
I will be at the Super Bowl. I will be in a secondary host role, and I will also be in a Jose Oquendo type setup.
Wait, how did Jose Oquendo? That's a deep reference here.
Deep reference. I have to be ready for a number of roles on first what's needed
utility.
In the situation.
Are you an understudy to Jim Nance at the Super Bowl?
Were you a Seinfeld viewer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bette Midler's understudy.
Midler. Yeah.
It didn't go that well.
Rochelle.
I didn't want to say that it's comparative to that, but it might be. So I don't want to confirm that, but I'm certainly not going to deny it.
And Nance knows your name, right?
I think so.
Okay. But if Nance no shows, you are calling the Super Bowl.
Hey-o!
We're counting on you this weekend. Wait, are you doing the Nets game on Friday?
I am.
Against the Cavaliers?
I am.
Oh, my God. Colin Sexton is not human.
Hold on. Let me write that down.
Okay.
That's good. I should use that.
Thank you, bud.
See you there.
That's Ian Eagle, the Nets play-by-play voice. Also does NFL on CBS and Westwood One. Got a lot of jobs. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.